Thank you, Michael. I was worrying about the light. It seemed rather dark in here. And knowing how you've all just enjoyed your lunch, it seems the light is at the perfect level just to sort of roll off into a silent slumber while we are trying to keep your attention up here. My favorite saying is, as goes California, so goes the nation. I'm sure that you've heard that saying, and I think it is generally true in culture, in fashion, and in politics. Back in 1978, Proposition 13 launched something of a national tax revolt, and then Governor Jerry Brown, also known to Steve and myself as Governor Moonbeam, a downwardly mobile politician who is now the mayor of Oakland, first opposed the measure, and then, of course, he took credit for it. Isn't that just like all politicians? More recently, in 1996, as Michael just said, Californians overwhelmingly approved the initiative, Proposition 209, to make it illegal for government to give preferences to people based on their race or their gender. The same concept that was in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. In Proposition 209, California voters gave their first chance to veto measures that had been imposed upon us by politicians and faceless bureaucrats. The measure survived, as we all know, both frontal and backdoor assaults by the race preference lobbies, including the American Civil Liberties Union. It has inspired similar efforts in other states, such as Washington, where Initiative I-200 passed in spite of efforts by our favorite shopping places, such as Starbucks, Eddie Bauer, tried to defeat it. And it even sparked an effort in Congress. Ward Connerly, who many of you know, who led the initiative both in California and in Washington, has become something of a national figure, and I'm very proud of Ward. California's Proposition 227 practically eliminated bilingual education in this state, and it has inspired efforts in New York and other states to end bilingual education. Ron Unz, who many of you know, who launched 227, is now talking about seeking the Republican nomination to run for the U.S. Senate against the incumbent Senator Dianne Feinstein. And if he is the nominee, he promises to bring the end of bilingual education at the national level. It would be comforting for all of us to think that the west to east flow is always for the good. But that would be a mistake. We can only hope that some California trends here do not pack their bags and head across the country. For unfortunately, California leadership now shows a profound distaste for democracy itself. As you may have noted, California is currently a one-party state. The Democrats have the governorship, the assembly, and the Senate. This is a party that is controlled by special interests, those very special interests that oppose Proposition 13, Proposition 209, and Proposition 227, the three strikes law, and many others. It is a party that is still smoldering from the years when Governor Pete Wilson held sway in Sacramento. The Democrats are now eager to turn back the clock to the days when special interests of the left got everything they wanted and more. In Governor Gray Davis, they have a man willing to go along with them on key issues. What inspires special interests is the governor's profound antipathy to the state's voters. So in California, as we approach the year 2000, Democrat is something of a misnomer. Our initiative process is one of the few examples of direct democracy in this state. But inside dealing has been used to quash direct democracy here in California. Worse, the governor is both willing and eager to blunt a cutting-edge issue. Lady Thatcher, former Prime Minister of the UK, saw the very damage that statism could do in the West and launched a revolution of privatization, trimming the nanny state down to size. The concept is really simplicity itself. Many services that are provided by government could be accomplished better and cheaper by private entities. Formerly socialist regimes have made the same discovery since the end of the Cold War. But as they go forward, California to me appears to be going backwards. Governor Wilson did not always find favor with conservatives here in the state, but he did a very good job of holding the line on the growth of government, resisting the greed of public sector unions, and privatizing several state services. Governor Davis has now reversed that dynamic. He created a new Office of Government Innovation. Now, if I've ever heard of an oxymoron, government innovation does not work. And to head it, he's picked a lawyer. I'm sure many of you are lawyers here. I see Bob Ernst. But exactly the kind of person who has a stake in bigger, more expensive government. That seems to be the type of innovation our governor now has in mind. Davis quickly agreed to raise the wages of state workers and appointed union leaders to key jobs where the leaders had very little expertise. More important, he is now reversing the very privatization that so many of us wanted. One of the areas that Governor Wilson privatized was janitorial services in state buildings, sending these out to bid. This worked extremely well, as privatization always does. It expanded private sector jobs, many of them entry-level positions, and saved us, the taxpayers, a lot of money. Governor Davis has unilaterally ended that practice and is now going to hire new state workers to clean our buildings at about twice the cost. Union workers now only represent 14% of the workforce. But the growth in unionization in the state of California is limited and is taking place in the public sector. You may have read recently that the strawberry pickers were attempting to be organized by the United Farm Workers, and that bid was turned down. So the Davis action represents today a kind of minority rule. The same principle applies on another very important cutting-edge issue to me, education. In spite of what many of you have heard, education in California is a for-profit industry. Textbook publishers, food services, bus companies, paper manufacturers, building contractors, all rake in billions of dollars from our government education system. By law, education is the state's largest expenditure, now costing $40 billion a year. Before these dollars, though, reach the children in our classrooms, these billions have to trickle down through four levels of government, from federal to state to county to local. And by the time that money gets down, there is very few dollars left for our children and the education that they're going to get. Those who operate the government system of education like it very much the way it is, with low standards, advancement by seniority instead of merit, short school year, whole language education, the new math, where the correct answer doesn't really matter, and social promotion. Clearly, California leads the nation in what I call junk thought. That is why in student achievement, California today languishes near the bottom of all states in the union. We are the only two states that are worse off than California are Arkansas and Mississippi. Our state superintendent of public instruction, Delaine Easton, is a former assemblywoman. For her, the issue is always money. If we just had more money, our children would do better. When state auditors recently discovered up to $50 million in fraud in our adult education programs, instead of correcting that problem, she proceeded to fire those who brought the issue to light. The money went to organizations with ties to state politicians, such as our current Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante and Speaker Antonio Villaraigosa. Governor Gray Davis is also a partisan Democrat, and he knows that money is not the problem in our failing government education system. My notion, he says, is to lift the performance of every actor in the system by sheer will alone. The principal, the parent, the teacher, and the student. There you have the California creed. Good intentions will definitely get the job done. Davis's actual plan includes intensive reading programs, mandatory high school exit exam, and more accountability for teachers. Nothing in that list will disturb those responsible for the dismal state of our education in this state. Of more interest to me is what Governor Davis did not mention. California was the second state in the union to allow charter schools, deregulated schools within the government system. These schools have proved popular with parents, particularly inner city parents, where the reform is most needed. Charter schools have given a measure of control back to parents and local organizations, but as many of you know, teacher unions and education bureaucrats have fought them every step of the way. Charter schools in California have offered innovative homeschooling and distance learning programs, but recent legislation passed in Sacramento curtails or eliminates those programs at the very time they are starting to improve performance and expand access for our children. Charter schools, it should be remembered, came as a response to a ballot initiative here in California, Proposition 174, which would have given parents choice in education. One of the reasons that this initiative lost is because the teachers' unions garnered over $10 million in spending. And the desire for school choice, though, has not departed in this state. In fact, it is growing stronger and stronger day by day, and Governor Davis knows that. Listen to this amazing statement by our governor. If we do not fix the public schools, we're looking at vouchers or some other seemingly attractive concept that will be imposed upon us by the voters. Imposed upon us? Here again, in education policy, we see the very open distaste for democracy and disrespect for our voters. We saw the same thing with Al Checkey when he was running for the Democratic nomination for governor. He called our initiative process here in California legislative vigilantism. In this mindset, California established school choice by a vote. They are imposing it as though it were some kind of a penalty on us. By this standard, I think the voters have imposed Gray Davis, Delaine Easton, and Bill Clinton on the nation. And who is the us? Who will have vouchers imposed on them? It's the professional and reactionary class of the politicians and the bureaucrats. These people oppose all efforts to allow parents the freedom to choose the type of education that their children want and deserve. Governor Davis may be more prophetic than he knows, because his plans will do little or nothing to improve education in this, the most populous state in the nation. The state's nonpartisan legislative analyst office has actually endorsed a pilot program of vouchers, and groups in the state are once again trying to get a ballot initiative for educational choice on the ballot. Much of the support is now coming from Silicon Valley, where high-tech entrepreneurs, as many of you know, have been scrambling to get qualified workers to come and work in their companies. Unfortunately, they have not been able to find them coming out of California's education system, and they are getting people from abroad. Even more interesting is some state Democrats, such as the very liberal Tom Hayden, are warming up to the choice concept, and Governor Moonbeam in Oakland as well. You can see this in the many editorials if you live up in Sacramento and you read the Sacramento Bee, which Lloyd Billingsley, who works with us, calls the Democratic Party newsletter, the Sacramento Bee. Choice enjoys very strong support in minority communities, where leaders now see it as a civil rights issue of the next millennium. The bloated government education system is like the Soviet Union just before its collapse. It still commands impressive power, but it cannot inspire belief among the citizens. I say our government system's days are numbered, and choice will become one of the competition models of our education. So yes, Governor Davis, we do agree with you. Voters may be willing to impose school choice on the state sooner rather than later. With people such as Milton Friedman and other pioneers, we applaud such a move, and we do hope that it moves across the nation to the other 49 states so that parents will have the ability to determine what is the best option for their children. Health care is another politically charged issue in this state. California, as you may not know, is the birthplace of what we call managed care and the HMO, and it was started by a professor at Stanford, Alan N. Tobin. State Democrats are still smoldering over the death of Clinton Care a few years ago in 94. And for those of you who don't know, there was also another proposition here in California, Proposition 186, which was even a more inclusive program of single-payer health care. And it was defeated by one of the largest majorities ever. My goodness. But just because something is down, it doesn't mean it's out. As Steve and I always say, as Edmund St. Vincent Millay used to say, history is not one thing after another. It's the same damn thing over and over again. And this is definitely true in healthcare in California and in America today. A single-payer system would be more accurately described as a healthcare system operated by the post office or the Department of Motor Vehicles. I'm Canadian, and I grew up under a government-owned healthcare system, and it works best under three ideas. One, you stay perfectly healthy. Two, you wait long enough and you get better on your own. Or three, you die. Nationally, supporters of this type of system have been trying to smuggle the Canadian system through the back door, and we've seen this with seniors and children. We now have Medicare for the elderly, Medi-Cal, or Medicaid for the people who are on low income, and of course we have the SCHIP, the state children's health insurance program for children. The only people today who are not covered by government care are people such as ourselves who are in that middle, and that's who the government wants to take over. California is now undergoing what we might call HMO phobia. In this process, politicians imagine that they can help people by forcing private companies to provide certain health care services. In late September of this year, Governor Davis signed a 21-bill legislative package that requires HMOs to cover mental illness, early cancer screening, and contraception. These bills allow patients to sue HMOs for denying services and to challenge healthcare decisions made by HMOs from an outside review process. So Davis is hoping that as goes California, so goes the nation. He cited these measures as an example of a national patient's bill of rights and said it's time to make the health of the patient the bottom line of every managed care company in California. On the face of it, this sounds like a good idea. For example, if mental illness is real, then insurers should be covering it to the same extent that they do other physical ailments. But mental health parity legislation is not a civil rights issue. It is an issue of whether government should force private companies to do something against their own business interests, which could have severe unintended consequences for all people in California. Increased mental health coverage will cost money, thereby increasing the cost of healthcare premiums for all of us. Academic research concludes that mental health parity laws can increase premiums between 2.5 and 8.7% in the first year alone. Increased premiums cause the number of uninsured to go up. As premiums go up, what happens? Many businesses decide they are not going to provide health care coverage as a benefit to their employees. It's just too expensive. Higher premiums may also deter individuals who are not covered by their employers from buying policies for themselves. A study by the Washington-based Galen Institute found that states with very aggressive health care mandates of all kinds suffered a 25.6% increase in the number of uninsured between 1990 and 1996, compared to only 7.2% in states without aggressive mandates. So for all its rhetoric and intentions, the current California plan will only make the healthcare situation in this state worse. It will also provide, as you know, a windfall for trial lawyers, a key special interest group of the Democratic Party. Health insurance is deductible for employers, but not for individuals. We have made a small victory up in Sacramento on this issue. Davis's recent budget included full deductibility of health insurance costs phased in over several years for the self-employed who purchase health care premiums. The solutions are to remove health care mandates, which drive up the cost of insurance for everyone, and to offer equal tax treatment for all who purchase health care on their own. One of the issues that we are pushing a lot is medical savings accounts, because they can definitely help individuals with out-of-pocket expenses, and it's a much better way to provide health insurance for all in California. We could go on and on. We're now seeing the Silicon Valley as an area where people think that we need to tax the internet, we need to increase regulations on all those companies in Silicon Valley that are making a fortune. I recently met with a California tax official who said, it's not a question of whether to tax the internet, it's how can we get going on it. So Governor Davis, who is a centrist moderate, has also signed a bill mandating that service stations provide free air and free water. Well, I want to have free hors d'oeuvres in every bar that I visit. In the end, this is why we need think tanks. Too many people have ceased to think today. But that is where we are, a counter-revolution determined to turn back the clock to the days when big government had its way. It takes a special kind of mentality to reverse privatization, but California is now up to that task. It is the people of this great state, not the leadership of a bloated reactionary establishment, who will make California a cutting-edge state in education. They will do this when they approve, not impose, a system that allows parents to choose the schools their children attend, just like those of you who benefited from the GI Bill. While we fight for school choice, smaller government, an unregulated internet, and health care based on family values and free market principles, we are alarmed at the disdain for democracy shown by the California elite. We are doing all that we can do to ensure that in this crucial area, the rest of the nation does not go as goes California. Thank you.